Okay, we'll start. Anybody have any questions from yesterday? Or? Mr. Ferrand, do you have a microphone?
Hello. You were saying that the reality we experience is a projection of our mind and our seeds. So, what is the seed that I see in other people? Is that all my seeds too?
Oh, when you see seeds in other people, what is
all,
that?
All the seeds they have.
Oh, yeah. That's also a seed in your mind. To see seeds in other people, which leads to the question. There's a famous question that came up: do other people exist? You know, or am I living in the side of my own head? You see, that's a very. I think it's a very important question because it could get very lonely. You know, if you believe that everyone you meet is coming from your mind. Then is it true that you're like Keanu Reeves in The Matrix when he was in the cocoon and, you know, everything was happening to him, but it was just inside his own head. And Master Dharmakirti thought it was an important enough question to write a book about it. And he wrote a book called Gyushen Drupa. Say Gyu. Shen. Drupa. So Gyu means mind streams of another person. Another person's being, you know. And then Shen means another. Drupa means to prove that there do exist. So he wrote a book called The Proof That Other People Do Exist. And because it was a very important question. He said, other people do exist. And they are projected by you. And if they weren't projected by you, they couldn't be other people. So not only are there other people, but if there were other people that weren't projected by you, they couldn't exist. Then you'd be lonely. You see? So it's not just that it's not a problem. It has to be that way. Okay? And you do project other people, but you project them as outside of you. You project them as independent of you. And you project them as having free will. Okay? All right? And that's a difficult question. That's a good question. So in the mind-only school, they say that because objects are coming from your mind, there's nothing out there. And then the higher schools say your mind is projecting them as out there. So they are out there. Okay? And that's a nice distinction to be able to make. Otherwise, it would get weird. But sort of another facet of your question is, you know, I mentioned that I had a chance to be one of the examiners of Pabongka Rinpoche, the third one. And so I asked him this question. I said, do Buddhas perceive suffering? Of other people suffering. Because if they do, that would imply they had some seeds within themselves to suffer. And then they wouldn't be a Buddha. You know? And so we debated for, I don't know, 20 minutes. And then the Gigu La said, the debate master said, Ola So, which means, especially if you're about to embarrass a high incarnation. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm really kidding. But sometimes they do that. Then we continued the debate outside. It was really cute. They kept debating him in the temple, and a bunch of us, we weren't done yet, and we went outside on the porch. I think Gyume Khyentse Rinpoche was there, and we debated some more. And so it goes something like this. Buddha can perceive that a person perceives themselves as a suffering person, and at the same time perceive them as an enlightened being. Okay? So the Buddha has the sage to see them as an enlightened being, and they are, to him. You have to say to him, and then the whole thing gets easier. And then the person has the sage to see themselves as a suffering being at the same time. And because the Buddha is omniscient, they can see that that person sees themselves as a suffering being and still teach them. Okay? Now, why he would have a seed in his mind to see that they see themselves as a suffering being? Your turn. You have a microphone? But I think the important point there is one thing, okay? It's not a contradiction that you could go into an enlightened mandala and see everyone in this room as a divine being, and they wouldn't see themselves that way. And that's not, in the theory of emptiness, that's not a problem. It's the same as the pen. You know, some people see it as a chewboy, some people see it as a writing instrument. But that means that the people in this room can be having opposite perceptions of this room. You can be in nirvana in this room, and other people can be suffering in this room. Because there is no standard room. There is no room between you. There's only the two rooms that you're seeing. Okay. All right. There's no standard reality. What do you call it? Base reality. There's no such thing. There's only the room that you're seeing and the room that I'm seeing. Yeah.
Yesterday you mentioned that the bad seeds were stronger than the good seeds. Something about
that. that we have.
We have.
Most of us have more bad ones.
Yes.
I think so. That's what he said.
Well. So, with all this work about yoga and meditation, we make our seeds stronger. That's it.
You mean the bad ones or the good
ones? No, the good ones. How do you get your good ones, better ones?
Yeah, good. Okay. The point that he was making was that because of our low-level bad deeds, not, he was saying we never killed anybody. We didn't. It's called mise tagyo. Say mise. Tagyo. It means kill the man and pull his horse down. I think in our times it would mean stop a guy at a red light and pull him out of the car and slit his throat and then run away. You know, that would be the same thing in our culture. And he said, look, nobody in this room ever did anything like that. But all day long we have low-level irritation at people, or we're just not happy. You know, we have like bad moods. And with some guy, we were driving here on Gilbert, and a motorcycle guy is going like this, and I'm thinking, you're stupid. You know, like, I said another word. And then, you know, he's going to get himself killed, and he's bothering other people, and then I'll have to pay for the police to come clean him up. And like that. And then those thoughts come to your mind like butterflies. You know, they just go through your mind, and then you're thinking about, oh, we're almost at the church. You know, they don't stay in your mind and they're not very firm, but the problem is that thoughts, random thoughts in your mind grow stronger with time. So my thinking that the guy on the motorcycle was a pain in the butt or something, that small thought, and I didn't hold it for more than a block. When we made the turn, I thought about the church. But that random thought, we have them all day. And then those are like, I have, someone gave me a bag of wildflower seeds last year. I don't know who it was, but thank you. Okay, so you know, it was a big random bag of wildflower seeds. And nobody knew, I didn't know what was in there. But I just, and they were tiny, tiny little seeds. And I just threw them around the yard, randomly, you know. And then suddenly they were popping up over there, and then they were popping over there, and they lasted all year. They went into winter, you know, different ones came off at different times. And they covered the whole yard. And the roses I planted and fertilized and everything, they died. And our bad thoughts are like that. We have constant negative thoughts. And they're not evil thoughts. They're like, you know, why don't they turn the air conditioning up? Or why don't they turn the air conditioning down? Or they're whiny thoughts. And then those take root, and then they grow big. And then they determine where we go after we die. That's what he was saying. Now, how would you make your good thoughts stronger? He mentioned three things. We usually mention four things. He mentioned Kunlong, Jorwa, and Juk. He called it Juk. So that would mean motivation, action, and this Juk means end, tail end, different spelling. Maoja. And in the Abhidharma, they give it a different name. They call it Shi Sampa Jorwa Tartuk. Say Shi.
Shi.
Sampa.
Sampa.
Jorwa.
Jorwa.
Tartuk. Very famous. So these are the four factors that can make a good deed strong. So when you do your good deeds, if you can do them with these four factors, they become much more powerful. And then small good deeds can make you wealthy, or, you know, can find you a nice partner, or change a serious medical condition, if you know these four things. So here they are. She means, who do you do your good action towards? You should choose carefully. Like helping a doctor who's helping many poor people, sick people for free is better than helping the sick people yourself. He can cover more. He or she can cover more people. Okay, so that's called she. Doing a kindness towards your parents is considered more powerful than other kindnesses because they've helped you so much. Doing a kindness towards someone who's taught you anything in your life is considered very powerful. Doing a kindness towards someone who's in an emergency situation and who has no one else to turn to is considered very powerful. So you can, I don't know about you, but I don't have enough time to do all the good things I want to do. I just don't have enough time. And the emails pile up and people get mad at me all over the world because I promised to do some cool project with them and then I didn't have time. And so you have to choose your good deeds carefully. What would be maximum impact with the time that you have? You have to choose. When you get into the do-gooder business, there's too much to do and you have to prioritize what's more important. What has a greater impact? So that's she. Sampa means put some thought into planning it. Okay, like plan your good deeds. Right? Like you want to make a donation, but you think about who you're going to give it to carefully. Because every time you think about who you're going to do it towards, you get another seed. Okay? If you don't think carefully and you just give a donation to the first person who asks you, you only get the one seed. But if you take I always tell people, wait a few weeks and you get some money, you know, somebody dies, leaves you money, or, you know, somebody gives you money for something, then wait and think about it. Because every time you think about it, you get the karma of doing it again. Okay? Because thinking about planning it is close to the core of where the seeds are planted, where the karmic seeds are planted. Deeds of thought are more powerful than speech or body. Lele jikten, that's okay. All the planets in the universe have come from karma. Deni semba dandeche. And karma is defined as thought itself and the deeds which thought inspires. And what the mind does is verbal karma, and physical karma. 대체 누이다 나길래, right? 내내지테 나서게 되니 사면 대체. 삼배 얘기 내이노. You can say that. 삼배 얘기 내이노. In between there, there's a line that says, thinking is karma of the mind. Okay. So the planning of a virtuous event is as many seeds as actually executing the event, okay, doing the event. Then jorwa means you have to actually do it. Okay. You can have the planning and the object in mind, the person in mind, but then if you don't actually do it, do you get any karma? Yeah, you do. You get the karma of planning. You don't get the karma of doing. Okay, so it's important to do also. But you do get some karma by planning. Sometimes you plan and then you can't do it. You lose the money or somebody robs you, and you still get good karma. Jorwa could have like several different versions. For example, in the act of giving, in the act of generosity, which you have to study if you want to be wealthy. If you want to not have money problems in your life, you have to study how to give money, or how to give assistance to people. And it's not a bad thing, it's not an evil thing. If you didn't have to worry about bills, then you could do other things. It's okay to have money, and to use it wisely to help people. So in jorwa, there would be three kinds of jorwa. For example, basic level giving would be, you see that somebody needs money and you just give them money. Like refugees, like we help refugees for 24 years. We have a 24-year-old project to help refugees. And at the beginning, we used to just give the refugees money. And then they spent it, and then that was it. And then they were poor again. So then level two was, we tried to teach them how to use computers or give them some kind of skill. Teach a person to plant corn rather than giving them corn, right? Then when the person is softened up, when the person trusts you, because you have given them money and you have given them a skill in their life, then you teach them level three, which is what? How to do the same thing for other people. So you teach poor people to help other poor people to get jobs. You see, you teach them these ideas, and then they become super farmers, you know. But they won't take to those ideas unless you've already been through it with them. Unless you've given them money and given them a skill, they won't listen to you when you say you should give money and skill. Okay? So first you have to do it with them, which is the same with everything. So that's jorwa. Those are three levels of the actual deed that can make the good seed stronger. The most fun and most powerful way to make a good seed stronger is called tartuk. Say tartuk. Tartuk means after the fact. After you give the money, or after you give the job training, or after you give the knowledge of how to give, right? Then you go home, you sit down on the couch, you make yourself a cup of tea, and you think about what a good thing you did. And that plants new seeds, just as planning before the action planted seeds. Enjoying the action after you do it is an important step. It's not pride. It's enjoying your own goodness. Okay? And that plants infinitely more seeds. If you wanted, without any training at all in business, to make the fastest growing manufacturing company in the history of Manhattan, that would be a good way. Just that trick. After you do a good deed, go home and think about what a kindness it was, okay? What a good thing it was. If in there is some wish that other people would observe what you're doing and get turned on and want to try it also, then you're flirting with bodhicitta. Okay? And that's real bodhicitta. You know, it's not something like you're praying in the class or something like that. It's like, if I were to use my knowledge to become highly successful and other people saw that, then they might try to do it also. And they would become highly successful. And then other people would see them getting successful and then they would try it. And the global repercussions are that there would be no poverty in the world. And then if you imagine that as you do a good deed, that's bodhicitta. Bodhicitta means bodhisattva love. You want to save the whole world. And the ultimate expression of that is simply happiness. Okay? If people see you are exceptionally happy and cheerful, even under, what do you call it? Tough circumstances, like doing a handstand with your hands like that. which would be torture. If people see that you are really happy, deeply happy, then, see, that's a kind of bodhicitta. Because then people will ask you, how did you do that? They'll be curious, you know. If you're all grumpy and whiny, and then people ask you what you're doing, you say, I teach Buddhist meditation, you know. And then they're like, I think I'll go to the TM, you know. So, really, the best form of bodhicitta, I think, is to be happy. And it's hard. I mean, the best way to affect the people around you is to be happy. That's the best example. Otherwise, your practice is not successful. It's weird. It's like you have a responsibility to try to find out how to be happy. If you want to help the world, the way is to become happy yourself. And then people will say, how did you do that? Okay. All right. So let's move on. And if you're not happy or you're not getting happier, then there's something wrong with your practice. Then there's something fundamentally wrong with your practice. And you have to look into the problem. If you don't feel happier as the years go by, then there's some kind of problem in how you're, carrying out your practice. Like, the texts are okay, that these practices are correct. But if you don't feel happier as the years go by, then there's something fundamentally mistaken with how you're conducting your own practice. Okay, and it's not a big deal. You can just, you know, talk to your heart lama and find out what's going on. Where are we? Tatarang Reng and Song Tukye were taught Dugna, which is the second line on 9A. Okay? The second line on 9A. You okay? Oh, okay. That's all right. If it's a foregone conclusion that you and I have bad seeds in our mind, and that they're probably going to assert themselves when we die, and then that would throw ahead of us a world of pain, worse than this one. Okay. It would be better to take care of that now than wait until you get hit by a car. Okay, like, right? I mean, you don't know if someone's going to, you know, just squash you in the parking lot. You don't know when you get out of here. I hope not, but... since we don't know, it's probably better to get ready, prepare now, take care of those things. So good. Deyang yin sun de le talwar de na de le kyo pe kyo sun good de. We need, we were talking about it, right? We need like a higher authority to go to, and we say, would you cancel all my karmic seeds? And they say, yes, okay. They're canceled, you know? Okay? We would like to have that. Then, and then we talked about a criminal in Tibet. Maybe he's about to be hanged. And then he better find some wealthy nobleman to talk the local guy out of hanging him. Okay? Dharpa Shuatar. Digle mi sepe gope nye chengen ru chimgi narwa nyewala. We are in a similar situation because future worlds of suffering are awaiting us in the way the hangman was awaiting the criminal. We're in the same situation. Okay. So then you get into the idea of the three jewels. Okay, in Buddhism, the idea of the three jewels. So these are three forms of protection which can prevent the seeds from going off in a certain way. Okay? We'll talk about that. Chulwat samdhu ma se de tembe langwan ki ne lan jukdok cha gut. It's not enough to say, I go for refuge in the principles of Buddhism. Okay? We have to jukdok, say jukdok. Juk means to engage in, and dok means to avoid. So juk dok together means to draw proper conclusions about which kinds of things we should be doing and which kinds of things we shouldn't be doing. Okay, I grew up Christian. I grew up in a church not far from here, and there is this line in the liturgy. It said, we have done those things which we ought not to have done, and we have done those things. Sorry, and we have left undone those things which we ought to have done, and there is no health in us. If I always remember that, but it's the same idea. You should know what you should be doing, and you should know what you shouldn't be doing, and you should apply that knowledge and not do what you shouldn't do, and do what you should do. Okay, that's jukto. Okay, then you won't have to say that line. Jukto. Chago. Shendu sangye ki chaki jemba. I remember these lines. I did grow up Christian, and I had certain beliefs, you know. And then when I was young when I went to Rinpoche. I was, 20. 22. Okay. 21. And then... you know, this struck me. These next lines really struck me. When I got there, he was teaching this. Shendu sangye ki chaki jemba dang jidjib chu chuvatar chuvatar chagya yena ngane chang simbe tatarang chak dunya min jungyang. If the Buddhas could reach into us and remove our bad seeds, right? If some enlightened being could just walk up to you and reach into your heart and take out all your bad seeds, right? Ranchak dungyang mijungwanam, changsin, they would have already done it, and we wouldn't be in pain now, okay? So what's the, here's a classical argument, okay, in my mind. What's the proof that even the most powerful being in the universe cannot remove from you your suffering? They didn't do it. I went to the dentist. It hurt. If there were a being who could have taken that pain away, and assuming they're not sadistic, I mean, assuming they're compassionate, then I wouldn't have had that experience. Ergo, therefore, it must be that they could not take away that pain. Okay? They cannot reach in and just take out your seeds. Not possible. Dikdip chu chua chagyu me, and they cannot wash away your bad deeds with water, he says. By the way, he had no knowledge of Christianity. There, in those days, even in 1975 when I met the Tibetans, they had never heard anything. Like, this is not coming from, it's not a criticism. They never heard of it. Okay. But in the same breath, you should always say, if you had deep faith in a being like Jesus, okay? If you had unshakable faith and belief in a person like Jesus, the karma of that faith could remove your bad deeds. Okay? The mechanism is not what you thought, but the result is the same. You know, and we don't say Jesus, we say your heart teacher or something like that. But it doesn't really matter, does it? You know, whoever appeals to you, it is possible. Karma can remove sin. And if you have a strong enough belief in... Remember the dog tooth story? So to make a long story short, some guy went to India. His mom told him to bring back a relic of the Buddha. He forgot. He got almost home. He remembered his mom wanted a relic of the Buddha. So he stopped at a dog carcass and pulled out a tooth. And then brought it home. And his mom put it on the altar and worshipped it. And then she got enlightened, you know, from a dog. You'll often hear His Holiness say, I'm just a dog's tooth. And that's what he's talking about. You know, that's the story he's referring to. It's not that he thinks he's a tooth. So it is possible that a being could remove your, including your heart teacher, could remove your negative seeds if you had enough faith to create the karma to enable them to do that. Okay? It comes from, still it comes from you. Okay? Grace also comes from you. Alright. And it's beautiful. And in the end, in Tantra, that's what you do. You work with your lama, your heart teacher, in that way. And your heart teacher could be Jesus or anybody else. So, in the highest schools of Buddhism, that makes sense to do that. Okay? Alright. Dōwē nīwa lā, dēn lā kia sā mī yī tsā 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 tsā. Chūshin. Dōwē dūngyā chākī mīsēlā. An enlightened being cannot wave their hand and all your suffering is going to go away. Nīgī tōpa shēn lā pō mīntē. This is a very, very famous line in scripture. Say nīgī tōpa shenla pomente. I cannot take my knowledge out of my mind and just put it into your mind. Not possible. I can't just take all my understanding of emptiness out of my mind and just stick it into your head. It doesn't work that way. Okay. You have to teach, and they have to hear, and they have to understand. Okay. Shenla pomente. Chuni denba tembe duwar zeng. Very famous line. By the way, this is all a quotation from a sutra. Chuni denba tembe duwar zeng. The Buddhas liberate people not by waving their hands, not by washing their heads with holy water, not by moving their understandings into another person's head, because it cannot be done. Chini Dhamma Tenpe Dorje. They teach other people about how reality really works, and that liberates those people. Okay? They teach people how reality works, and that frees those people. Okay? They have to follow the path themselves and free themselves, you know, ultimately. Even if it means enabling your lama to do it. Got it? Okay. Che sumba tena daki nyen son ten le thar we chir koin jo la kyab chu ne nyen son ten le thar we thab le je len de ki pang lan la tsu shin du juk tok chao nyam du sampani. Therefore, you and I should take refuge in the powerful objects of the Buddhist faith, which is the Buddha, the teachings, and those who keep those teachings, by observing the laws of karma. Okay? We should take refuge in those powerful beings. How? It's not that you sit in front of a picture and go, oh, please help me, or something like that. You worship a Buddhist deity by observing the laws of karma in your own private life, not hurting people and helping people. And that is Buddhist worship. Okay. Alright. With all of the talk from the first day up to now, when we started talking about what a good chance we had now and what good circumstances we had now, up to this moment, we have covered the first level of the Lama, which is called the level which is shared with people of lowest capacity. Okay? The steps of the path which are shared with people of lowest capacity. Okay? What's lowest capacity mean? Lowest capacity in Buddhism means when I die, I don't want to go somewhere bad. Meaning, I don't want to create a bad world for myself. I want minimum spiritual, what do you call it, motivation. When I die, I don't want to go somewhere bad. That's minimum. We've covered now the steps that you need to follow to achieve that. And that's called, you would think it would be called steps for a person of lowest capacity, but it's called what? Steps which are shared with a person of lowest capacity, meaning that when you move up to middle capacity, you don't give up those. You keep them. You just build on them. Okay, that's an important principle in Lama. Not even the Buddha wants to go to hell. Okay? Got it? You never lose that basic motivation. But then you build on top of it. Okay? Ona, nyansong le tarwa de chokam shena. Is it enough for your spiritual practice to be aimed at no more than not going somewhere bad after you die? Is that enough? Should you stop there? No. Okay, he says, De micho means no, you shouldn't stop there. Micho te. De le tatsangi dendur ten la, lenre lenyi shi tok tu chukyan. Lar le ngemba shiktan chen na ngensom du tumar gyurwe, ta mit senshin yi ten me. He's saying you can learn to manipulate your seeds so that after you die, you won't go to a bad place. You can learn that skill, right? But that doesn't destroy the bad seeds, all right? It just suppresses them. And then maybe you would be okay for one or two lifetimes. Then the bad seeds would reassert themselves. Okay? So he says it's not enough to cultivate enough goodness to create a nice world for yourself after you die. Because when those seeds wear out, then the other seeds will, what do you call it, assert themselves. And then you're back to where you started. Then they think, Munyang Rangre Dendro Den Mango Token Lar Nyan Song Du Lung Shing. In countless lifetimes, you and I have achieved good places to be. And then we lost it. And we dropped again. Tata Yang, Tungewa Dindare. And we're the same now. We're high right now in the cycle of birth. We're high now, but we will drop again. Tayang Rangrekewa Mamanam. So, Hai Wormo Sambadan, Jagan Gyajingi Lu Langme, Hai Shimekanga, Dubayang Manguchete. You and I saw this thing called the Hubble telescope video. It's 45 minutes, okay? And it starts out with this corny stuff, and the astronauts go and they change the mirror or something, and they make it all dramatic, but it's kind of boring. And then the most exciting part is the guy is making an enchilada in space. And he's got Velcro things all over the wall of the spaceship. And there's baggies, Ziploc baggies. One's got the beans, one's got the red sauce, one's got the tortillas, you know. And then he opens them up, he takes out the tortilla, and then he grabs the beans, and they're just floating, you know. You know, and then he gets the sauce, and then he rolls it really fast. That was the best part. But then they went into, it was really beautiful. I don't know, they have some new infrared scanners on the telescope or something, but they can, they went something like a billion light years away, and they could see into a cloud in which stars were forming, like kids in the womb. They had nice little cocoons around them, and the little star was starting. They were baby stars, and the telescope can see through the womb. And they said it's a huge galactic disk of wind spinning, and that's what the Abhidharma says, which is very weird. It's called Lungi Kinkor, the spinning disk of wind. But now they believe that's how it happens. And so this wind is spinning, and then there's these baby stars being born, you know. And they took you out that far, and they simulated going 500 million miles an hour. And slowly the stars got bigger and passed, and then you reached this little womb, you know. And you saw that. Then they kept going. And they reached the end of the Milky Way. And then you're like, looking ahead, like driving a car, and you hit the end of the Milky Way, you know? And then there's another galaxy, you know? And then they fast-forwarded, and then there were billions of galaxies, pictures of billions of galaxies. Then they went farther, and then to galaxies that weren't formed yet properly, and they're all clunky. They look like melted Reese chocolates. And they say, oh, these are baby galaxies. These are the birth of galaxies, like the Milky Way. And the Milky Way has several billion stars in it. So you're watching billions of other galaxies getting born, you know? And they're pictures, they're photographs, they're not drawings. And it was really cool. So imagine a being who had the power to manipulate those objects, like marbles, okay? Imagine a being who has the power to manipulate galaxies like marbles. Play with galaxies like marbles. There are such beings, okay? You can be born as a person who has a body, a different kind of body, who can manipulate galaxies at will. Okay? Just play with galaxies of billions of stars each. That's called Sangha. That's, you know, they say Brahma, right? Or Chakra, or Vishnu. We believe there are such beings. And they are incredibly powerful. You can't imagine how powerful they are to play with galaxies. You know, we believe there are such beings. We don't think Brahma is some little guy that was Krishna's friend, and you know, Krishna played flute and Brahma was fooling around. And it's not like that. In these histories, there are people. There was a guy named Brahma, and he was playing with galaxies. He was that big and that powerful, you know. And you have been Brahma. You have been that being who could play with galaxies. You have been there, and you have done it. That's probably why you could even hear my words today. Okay, you have done that. You have played with galaxies as if they were marbles. Okay, you have been there, Kanga, and you have lived in those places and had that power and that reach of your arms. Okay. Yang dene se pute nyawe chakse ki shir brodoche gopa manduchuma. Then there's a place, there's a hell realm, okay? It's like a huge griddle. Like a, what do you call it? Pancake griddle. Okay? Think of a football field. Or think of Phoenix. Just the size of Phoenix, one huge metal plate. And then they drop you on that plate. And it's red hot. And you're naked. Okay? And you run. Okay? You just run. And you run as far as you can, exhausted, and then you can't do anything else. You turn around and you run some other direction because there's nowhere to go. There's no end to the griddle. You just run. And your feet are burnt. The skin comes off, the flesh comes off, and then it grows back, and you run. And that's, you spend many years like that. Okay, there are places like that. So what he was saying is, you've been a galaxy marble player who dropped down to the griddle countless times, many, many times. Okay, you've gone to those extremes of power and then helplessness. Okay. You have played in the, what do you call it, the playgrounds of the gods, and you have enjoyed yourself there, drinking the divine wine of the gods. And then they have thrown you into places where you had to drink molten iron. Countless. You've been to these extremes. Okay? These two extremes. Hai kuda kumo mango dang yam du tsi shin chene yang nyawe le ken jiksu ruwe takor ne du gopa. You have held in your arms the most divine women and boys of the paradises, worldly paradises. And you have spent many years like that, in each other's company. And then you have been dropped to realms where you are surrounded by people with weapons who kill you over and over again. Okay? These kinds of, what do you call it, hugs you have had. These two extremes of hugs, okay, you have gone through countless times. Kapre kolo gyore gyalpo kete bangmi kimbung traki dakpo chene yang jitengi chenyo be tama pensi dong chukzi tabu kiwadan. You have been king of the world countless times, okay? And there have been hundreds of thousands of cities and households under your reign, right? You have had you've got to understand what a king was in the old days, okay? A king could walk into your house and say, I like your wife, and I'll take her now. Oh, I also like the pizza in your refrigerator, and you just take that. You cannot lock your door to the king, and you have no rights to the king. The king can do anything. The king can come in and kill your children and leave. There's no, that's what a king really was. You have been that kind of king. Countless times. And then he says, then you have dropped down to being three, he gives three examples. Pongzi means, what do you call it? Donkey keeper? Donkey, the person who keeps the donkeys and feeds them and cleans up their poop. okay? Bongzi. And you have been a Chungzi, what do you call it? Cow herder? And you have been the guy who stood on the corner of Southern and Gilbert in a Statue of Liberty suit. And had to hold that sign. Okay. That's good. Man. That's hard. Kabre Nima Dan Dawakete Rangi Wilki Ling Shi Sawachene Yang Ling Parki Munak Sukete. There are special kinds of divine beings like Brahma, but their bodies are as, they produce as much light as a star. Okay? Their bodies produce as much light as a star. Okay? And they have provided light to whole worlds by standing in, near them. Okay? They provide sunlight to whole planets, just by standing near them. You have been that. And then you have been born into places between the stars, in utter darkness, with no visible light. And you have lived whole lifetimes in darkness, in the middle of cold vacuum of space, as a living being and conscious being, and not seeing anything except black. And not felt anything, just conscious inside a void of blood. You have lived between the stars countless times. You have been the starlight which illumines planets, and you have lived countless lives stranded in darkness for your entire life, with no other sensation. Yeah.
When you become a being that Rabbi, you don't have the knowledge to sustain.
Yeah. He said, when you become a being like Brahma, don't you have the knowledge to sustain the light, right? There's a problem. The karma to understand is different from the karma of authority or power. You see what I mean? So, or wealth. So you meet oftentimes wealthy people who have no knowledge of how they got wealthy. And they can't sustain it because they don't know how they got wealthy. And the same with Brahma. So the karma to know how to sustain it and the karma to have it happen to you are different. And that's why many wealthy people lose their wealth, what do you call it? Helplessly. They don't want to. Bill Gates didn't want to have the, what do you call it? The dishonor or the embarrassment of being thrown out of Microsoft, but he was. And he had all the money, but they still threw him out. And then Steve Jobs had the same thing happen, right, at Apple. And then they asked him to come back. And then he got extremely successful, and now he's dying. You know, he will die in the next few months. He has very serious cancer. You know, the latest iPad announcement was maybe his last thing. And, you know, so the ripening of seeds for power and wealth ripened independently of the seeds to understand how they got wealthy or how they got powerful. Okay. We can't leave it at that, right? That's a little depressing. I think I might have been that darkness person. I remember something like that. You know, I don't know. It really kind of disturbs me when I read that line, because I think maybe recently I may have done that. I don't know. Rangi lakpa kyan kum sangyam mitongwe. Unable even to observe the bending and extension of your arm. The darkness is that thick for a whole lifetime. You can't even watch your hand come and go. So, korowe deki jisam tokyo yiten me. Therefore, there is no level of authority or power in this world, which is, what do you call it? You can't trust it. Like we tend to think, I would like to be the boss of my company. I hope I could work up to be the president of the company. Or I hope I could be, you know, the head of this or that. Or I could be the single object of so-and-so's full attention. But it comes and goes. It always wears out. Okay. Those things, what he's trying to say to us, look, you can manipulate your seeds. You can reach places of extraordinary authority and power and wealth. But it always changes. And the nature of having great authority and great wealth and a great, what do you call it? The most beautiful or intelligent partner, for example, is that when that karma is exhausted, you tend to drop drastically, violently. Drastically and violently. It's not that you just move down to the vice presidency. Normally you get locked up like Mr. Mubarak and his two sons right now, today. They are locked up in a prison in Egypt. You know, and the people, and they locked up countless other people. You know, now this a few days ago they were locked up. That's it. So normally, we want to have great amounts of power or wealth or the most handsome guy or something like that. But even if you get them, the nature of those seeds is that when they finish big time. And you drop. You don't just leave the country. You get locked up in the prison where you locked up everybody else. And then they'll probably, what do you call it? Prosecute them. You know. And that's the nature of great worldly success. Okay. If it could stay, or if there were some kind of stability to it, it would be okay. But it doesn't. Okay, we're going to take a break. I was supposed to announce something. What was I supposed to announce? That's not what I was supposed to announce. This is too long to announce. Oh, yeah, this is what I was supposed to announce. Okay, yeah. We have a thing. You know, we do Diamond Cutter Institute. And we go around the world, and mainly we help people who are trying to start businesses. How to do them with karma, how to become so. Like we did a very nice program in Hanoi. Sometimes we go to first world countries like what, Taiwan. I think in the next, by the way, the next DCI retreat in Taiwan in September, I believe 1,600 people are coming to the retreat. We need to take one teacher for every 15 to 20 people. We will need, I figure we're going to need at least 50 to 75 of you to take with us, okay? Now, that kind of retreat, they pay for the airfares, and we all go, and it's all happy. Then I get invitations, we get invitations to third world countries, the latest being Bulgaria and Kiev, Ukraine. So they said, will you come help us? Because they are desperate. Especially in Ukraine, they are desperate. The economy has collapsed. The food problems. Everything is desperate. So we like to go to those countries. And for example, we went to Vietnam and we did a really good job and it has been really successful. And they have used the teachings and they've become quite strong. The people who came to the retreats really benefited in Hanoi and in Ho Chi Minh City. We held the retreat in the fields where the Viet Cong had their underground tunnels. The retreat was held in the fields under which the Viet Cong had their tunnels. And some retired officers of the Viet Cong and the South Vietnam Army came to the retreat, some of whom were amputees and things like that. And And we had an extraordinary effect on those people, and it's working. They started businesses and they're having good success. So when we go to the Ukraine, we don't charge them. We just have the retreat, and they can't even pay for our airfare. Do you get where I'm going yet? If anybody would like to help, we need either miles or some donations for airfare to do the trip to Eastern Europe. We've also been invited to Moscow, Kiev, and Sofia, and we just finished publishing The Diamond Cutter in Estonia and Romania. So we'd like to do an Eastern Europe tour. It's planned. We will go, you know, and we'll do our credit cards. But if you'd like to help, if you have miles, that's helpful. If you have cash, that's also helpful. And you would talk to Scott, and he's in charge of that because he's from Czechoslovakia originally. Okay, so if you would like to help, we go to the worst countries we can find. And we try to help them, okay? I mean, the next plan is Congo, okay? And I said, can you promise that we won't be kidnapped? And they said, no. So I'm kind of holding off on that. But we've been invited by advisors to the president of the Congo to come and teach there. But I don't know about it. Okay. All right, have a good break. We'll start again in 10 minutes, and I'll be here. What time am I supposed to stop? 4 o'clock, probably. It's 2 to... Oh, we start at 2:30? Good to see you.
Always a pleasure.
Careful. Yeah, how are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Yeah.
You look good.
Always a pleasure.
Are you doing yoga? I think.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you look good.
I'm
fine. Yes, enjoy. Okay, we'll start. Are you ready? Okay. We'll start. I think Rebecca put this up. There'll be a retreat. The corresponding retreat to this course will be August 12th to the 21st in Prescott, Arizona, which is about 2 hours from here. And we had a really nice time in the winter, January. We expected 50 people to come. I think 175 came. We just shoved them all into the cabin. And then the cabins all broke. All the water pipes broke. It was like the coldest day of the year. The day we got there, everybody's car went off the road. It was really exciting. And we had a really, really good time. And it was really awesome. And basically, we do you the kindness of taking away your laptop and your cell phone. And because you can't do it on your own. And then it's a wonderful chance. Like, you have a 10-day silent, mostly silent, retreat. We will continue some classes like this during the day. That time of year in Prescott is the prime time. It's 70 degrees. It's all pine forest. You know, deer walking through the camp and occasional rainstorm. And the camp, those of you who went last time, the camp has agreed to buy 100 new mattresses. And you got to sign up early if you want one of the new mattresses. This is a marketing ploy. So anyway, it helps us a lot if you sign up early. Last time, people did pretty well, but I think like 50 signed up in the last week. And that was a little stressful for us. So just out of kindness, if you can, you know, try to sign up earlier so we can prepare for you. They're actually, they love us, the camp loved us. I mean, who would pay full rate for a broken cabin except a bunch of Buddhists? So they want us back. They're even going to expand the teaching room for next winter if we will come back. By 50%. And we'll have a big circus tent for the show this summer. And it'll be nice. And there'll be some camping allowed. If you don't have money, talk to Rebecca. And then it'll be nice. I kind of see, like, I did all my summer camps up there, and Boy Scouts and church camp, and it's beautiful in the summer. And we'll have, like, campfires and marshmallows and meditation and all that stuff. Okay? So it's really, really a chance to get out of your normal way of life and change your mind and then go back to your normal way of life. Okay? It's a nice, I think 10 days is a very useful time to do a retreat. You can change a lot in 10 days. Okay. Say again. Sorry? Nicole and Tahia. We have two professional massage therapists in the group. If anyone is feeling like your body's sore, then, sorry, if you need a massage, they came in Prescott, and it was, you know, personally, I didn't think massage was such a big deal. Or I didn't really respect it too much, to tell you the truth. And then, you know, we had four professional masseuses at the massage therapist at the last retreat. And then they treated people all day. They went all day. And it was great. And it was the calmest retreat I've ever presided over. It was very, very beautiful. People were very calm. You know, nobody got lung. People had a great meditation. Anybody who had knee pain, back pain, they went to the massage therapist. And it was really, really beautiful. So if that applies to anybody this week, you are welcome to talk to Tahia and Nicole Vigna. Where's Nicole? Yeah. So talk to them if you want to arrange to have one done. Yeah? Yeah. You save money if you sign up by next Sunday. Or we charge you more if you don't sign up by next Sunday. Okay. By the way, there's no charge for the teaching and there's no charge for this teaching. We just have to pass on to you the cost of the camp and the food. Okay, but there's no charge for the teaching. I extort that out of you later. Okay. All right. In a way, if any kind of position that we can reach in this life is so karmically liable to fall. See, I mean, what do you call it? There's a word in English. The higher you go, the lower you fall, or something like that. Big guys fall harder. Something like that.
The bigger you are, the harder you fall.
The bigger you are, the harder you fall. It's karmically true. When you reach any high position or position of wealth, or a relationship which is extraordinarily expensive karmically, like the girl is just way too beautiful for you, then the whole thing, no, the karma wears out, and then you hit bottom, you hit rock bottom. And that's the nature of that kind of karma. Okay? Ingome. Therefore, it has no real essence to it. It's hollow. Munche dunya de zang shi yun, da du korwane ma korwane ma tar chin de le kyang chen ma wan yong gu. We've been up and down. What I mean to say is the nature of karma is that it goes up and down. Okay? We want to get as high as we can. We want to have the nicest boy. We want to have the highest paying job. We want to have the best car. We want to be the thinnest person in the yoga class and better in our handstands than Anatole. But then when you get it, the nature of that karma is that you fall farther. You fall harder and farther. Okay? And we've been through that countless times in your life. It's almost a curse to want to go hard, because then you have farther to fall, and it always will wear off. It always wears off. So it's a weird, it's an unfortunate combination of things. We want to go as high as we can, and then you will always fall equally far. But we still want to go as high as we can. It's weird. It's a weird human thing, okay? What he's saying is that you've been through that countless times. Didn't you get it yet? You know, didn't you notice that the higher you go, the worse it is afterwards? You know what I mean? So don't, you know. Then he says something worse. He said, what could be worse? That's the way it's been for your whole life, and you have no reason to expect it's going to change in the future. It also applies to your life after today. It's going to be the same. You're going to go higher and higher and drop lower and lower. That's the way your life is going to be, okay? It's not just that it's frustrating to have fallen on many occasions. It's that it's going to repeat itself countless times again, okay? Given the circumstances haven't changed. It's going to continue. Munchega rendu ki part kete mit sang was sande sepanam chok chuk chik to gup gupar sharma riga borjam le hapa gyur. In Tibet, dogs eat human excrement. Okay, they can't get anything else. And in India and in Tibet, dogs and pigs, they're like the lowest animals. Everyone hates them. They throw rocks at dogs, and then they learn to eat excrement because there's nothing else available. And then Pabongka Rinpoche is saying, if you piled up all the human excrement that you have eaten in your existence as a dog, it would be higher than Mount Everest. And it's not an exaggeration. It's an under, what do you call it? It's an under-adjuration. Because you've been dog countless times, and you've wandered the city and eaten whatever you could find, you know? And just the spaghetti you've eaten in this life, I don't know, probably bigger than this room? Something like that. Okay. Or pizza, okay? All right. The point is that it's been going on for so long, and it's just going to be more and more. Okay? More of the same. At some point, you should get tired of it. Dadu korwa lama tarchen dene kya tsamshita. Munche de rangke che shorwe gonam chokchi tu pung na tsangbe jik dene kya kya watsam yun muddu. Dadu korwe chita che tupa shi machumna dene kya mang tsamshi shorga. If you took all the heads that you have had chopped off by those who hated you and put them in a pile, that would also be higher than Mount Everest. You have been hated by countless people. They have murdered you countless times. And they have cut your head off countless times. And this, the pile of the heads you have lost would be higher than Mount Everest. It is. When Chen Yawakin and Tochu Kuma Karlupan and Chok Chuk to Kiuna, Gatsu Chen with Chune Kian Mansang Shi to Tum Chin Tadum Korone Matar Chen Dene Kian Mansang Shi Tum Gubane. You have been in the hell realms countless times. In the hell realms, there's a particular torture where they pry your mouth open and they pour molten steel into your mouth. And if you took all the molten steel that you've been forced to swallow in your lifetimes and gathered it together, it would be larger than the Pacific Ocean. And that's not an exaggeration. Okay? It would be larger than that. But what he says is that it's going to be more in the time to come. You see what I mean? Unless we do something now, there will be more to come than was in the past. We have more to go than we've passed already. We're not halfway through. This is very interesting. He says, if you really... I feel the mood in the room right now, and I think you get it. I don't know why. Sometimes you give this talk in a group of Americans and they just blow it off. And they're like, I don't believe in all that stuff. You know, I feel the mood in the room that you feel that it's true. You sense that it's true. There must be some, I think, deep memory of having been through those things inside of us. Then he says, if you really became fully aware of your past lives, Ninglung, Ninglung Dang, say Ninglung Dang. Ning is Xin, heart, right? Lung means what? Lung means prana, but it can also refer to disease of the prana of the heart. Dang means that would rise. Ninglung Dang means the heart prana would rise, meaning you would go crazy. It's the Tibetan way of saying you would go stark raving mad. It's a blessing that we can't remember everything that happened to us before, because you would just go insane. Father me, then Koran la yang dunya ke rangshin kona nende te. We're gonna stop there. Okay, that's it, right? 4:30. Am I right? Is it 5? God bless. Really? Oh. What time do we start? No, I mean the last class. It goes to 2:35? Great. Oh, good. Okay. Wow. All right. Then I have you. Sada me ten koran ma yam dunya ke gamsin kona le me mandete. He's going to go into the problems you get when everything's going right. Okay? He's going to now go into the problems of everything going right. So there are periods in your life when things go right. I never heard anybody like wailing and saying, somebody says to them, you won the lottery, and they say, why me? You know? You say you have cancer, then they say, why me? You say you won the lottery, no one ever says, why me? So he wants to talk about what's really happening while you're successful, okay? So while you're on top, okay, so being on top is dangerous because you have further to fall. But even while you're on top, there are certain problems, okay? So he's going to go into the problems of being on top. In terms of rebirth, it's being a human or being a pleasure. We call pleasure being. They're like Brahma, okay? People who fool around with galaxies. Right? Like there's problems with being in a good place. He's going to list them. Ready? Mir kekyan, kekyan na chi dumya, shen na bi shi. Even if you get to be a human, right? What does that mean? The beginning moments of it are what? That's rather painful. All right, terribly painful. Like you, it's also lucky you can't remember that. Your mom remembers, sort of, but. It's lucky you can't remember. You come into this world, we come into this world, it's supposedly good to be born as a human. It's supposed to be the case. Somebody asked Lord Buddha, how many people on this planet right now will come back as a human? And he licked his finger and he touched it to the dirt and he said, that many. That much compared to the quantity of dirt in the planet. You know? That many people compared to the quantity of dirt that makes the planet. You know? So even if you do get back, the experience is terribly painful. The first few hours and the first few weeks are terribly painful. Okay? The time inside the womb is supposed to be extraordinarily painful. And what do you call it? Frightening. You feel like you're choking and you feel like you're like in a closet or something. It's supposed to be very painful to be inside that womb. Even if you get into a human life, you know, even if you get successful and things are going fairly well, still you have to lose people and things that you love, okay? So everybody does. Okay? It's like, I don't know about you, like sometimes I meet a really big shot person and I don't know, like some official, government official in some country. And I was at we stayed the night in an ambassador's house in Jakarta. One of the most powerful ambassadors in the world, okay? Then I'm like, I don't know about you, but I tend not to treat them as human beings. I think, oh, this person is different than other people. This person's really powerful, you know? But then when you spend the night there and you talk to them, you know, their son has cancer and their other kid got divorced and, you know, their wife is fooling around with somebody and all this stuff is going on. The people, even in the highest positions, are constantly losing the things that are dear to them. And their life is also threatened constantly. All the things they love are constantly threatened. And they have all these disasters going on. Even these big, supposedly, people who made it, like movie stars and stuff like that. So that applies to all of us. Even when your life is going well, there are constant small problems, and you are constantly losing things that you want and things that you would like to have. Okay, and especially in relationships, you lose them. Mi dupa dang chepe dunya. And we constantly meet things we don't want, okay? Like, I don't know. Constantly things, I mean, in business, like we have a small tour business, right? DCI, we have this business. And it's just like amusing to watch the ups and downs, you know? It's kind of like funny to watch the ups and downs. So like and my own mood goes up and down with the emails, you know. So we got an email, X company wants you to come to China and join with them. And would you give up, Geshe-la, your retreat time to come to China for an important business conference? And I'm like, no, you know, that's the policy. Because we get emails like that every day. Then I get another email, the president of China is coming and you are the keynote speaker. Okay, I would come for that. Then I'm like, my nature is to tell everybody, you know, did you know, I mean, it's not a big deal, but the president of China is coming to my next talk. I don't know why they chose me as a keynote, you know. The problem is they know I can't keep my mouth shut, so I tell like 50 people. Then I got the third email. The guy whose company it is, who said that the president of China was coming, wasn't telling the truth. And The president of China has been to a conference there that took place last weekend. In the same state. Or something like that, you see? And then people come up to me and say, when are you talking to the president of China? I'm like, well, yeah. It kind of changed, you know? And now they want to know if I can pay for the airfare, you know? And then, you know, then you can go crazy, Ning Lung Dung, right? You can go crazy with the ups and downs of a business, you know? You get all excited, you know, somebody says, you know, this is going to happen, and then you get all excited, and then you get all depressed. Probably next week, the president of China will write me and say, I thought you were coming. And, you know, stuff like that, okay? You know, if you're in business, if you do anything like that, it's just crazy. It's ups and downs constantly. And you can't, in business, you learn to be what? You just, what do you call it? You get to it if you if you don't want to go crazy, you just have to go. You have to roll with it. You have to bend with the wind. You don't take it so seriously anymore. You just keep going. You know, okay, next, what's the next thing? You know, oh, they want you to go to Kiev, but they can't pay anything. Okay. And you just keep rolling. But then what do you call it? There's some kind of damage done to your body and mind. Okay, you get a little bit older. Right? Each time you get an email and it turns out the guy wasn't coming, and can you pay for your own flight, you know? Then you can be a kind of a tough guy, and you can say, okay, well, I'm a businessman, I know these things come and go. But it costs you something. There's some kind of blow to your psyche, and another gray hair comes out, or another wrinkle starts, or you feel a little bit more tired. Each time you get these blows, the slings and arrows are about ready to fortune, right? So he's talking about that. And you can't avoid them. You see? You can't control it. Okay. There are things that you want and you can't get them. You know, there are people you would like to be, there are relationships you would like to have. There are objects you would like to own. There are health, things about your health, your body that you would like to change. Things about your emotions that you would like to change. You can't. We are locked in a way. So good. There's a, supposed to be, there's Brahma and those guys who live in some kind of divine existence, temporarily. And then there are supposed to be like, what do you call it? Semi-Brahmas and semi-Indras and semi... They're not quite as cool as Brahma. Like, their body can shine and light up a planet, but only half a planet. So what happens between them and the other guys? Jealousy. Like, you can only light up half a planet. You know? I can light up three planets. You know? And then the half a planet guy sees the three planet guy. And he's... It's not bad to be able to light up half a planet. But then they feel, like we, they feel this intense envy and jealousy. They're torn up by it. Their whole life is ruined. Their whole happiness is destroyed by comparing themselves with somebody else. Okay. The happiness of their life is destroyed by comparing themselves with somebody else. You know? So, okay. Anatole can do this kind of handstand, you know. And then, if you had a certain attitude about it, you would just you'd feel terrible about your yoga. You'd say, oh, I'll never be able to do that, you know. And then every time you did yoga, you'd feel bad. You'd feel worse every day you did yoga, you know, because the jealousy would eat you up. And then that's what happens. What he's saying is that among people of power and position, and of great beauty and accomplishment and beautiful partners, etc. Among the highest realms of our life, you could say the Hollywood stars, I don't know who, the great politicians, but there's this special suffering of comparing themselves to each other. Even if you make it to the top, and even if you can stay at the top for a while, you are eaten up by jealousy of the people who are slightly higher than you. Okay? Like, I don't know, probably Kate Winslet is jealous of Angela Jolie. Or vice versa. I don't know. And then they're unhappy. As they are in the highest echelon of movie star them, they're unhappy because they're comparing themselves to each other. You see, there's a unique ability of people who have been successful to make themselves unhappy by comparing themselves to other people who are successful, all right? Even when they're both successful, all right? And we do that. Dude, then the Chapdoki Yi Dumi, he uses the word torment or torture with regard to how it feels to be at those levels because of the jealousy factor. There's a special kind of being. There are realms that you can be born into if you've been pretty good your whole life. Okay? If you've been pretty good your whole life, there are realms you can be born in. Are you born into a realm, by the way? Let's check in. You're not born into a realm. Your own mind is projecting a world and you're stepping into it. Okay? So that world can exist here. Okay? If you died right now and if you had certain seeds in your mind, you wouldn't have to go anywhere else except for the Unity Church in Mesa. And your hell realm could be here, in this same location. What do you call it? Longitude and latitude. It would still be here. It's just that you would be shooting forth a different reality. Okay? So anyway, there's places you can be born, where you live, in some of them you live for tens of thousands of years, in extreme pleasure. Really happy, okay? No problems. A beautiful existence. Like, we stayed in a house on, where was that? Venice Beach? Somebody, one of our friends by accident temporarily got this house on Venice Beach. 2-3 stories glass front on the beach. The first house on the beach. 2-3 stories glass front, you know? With a maid, and you know, we just, you know, my life is kind of strange. So, they're like, Geshla, you should stay there. I'm okay. And we would just walk out and go to the beach, off the steps, and walk out to the Pacific, you know. And I don't know what the place cost. So, there are people like that who live their whole lives like that. And then, chite, say, chite, pope, dunya. And the reason that we got to stay in the house was that the owner died. Extremely wealthy person died. We had to take care of their dog. The dog survived the owner. Okay. And before they passed away, they got cancer. Right. So they've been living in this house on the sand at Venice Beach for their whole adult life. And they have everything. They have everything they could want, right? And then they find out they have cancer. And that's it. And then the suffering of knowing that they're going to die now quickly, they say that suffering far surpasses the pleasure of having been in the house for 20 or 30 years. Even if the cancer only lasts a few weeks, the pain that they go through upon hearing that they are mortal far surpasses the pleasure of 30 years in the house. Okay? The shock and the suffering of suddenly learning that they are mortal is much worse than the 30 years of you know, it was okay in the house, it was pleasant. And then it's all canceled, you see. So there are, and it happens to us, okay? Once you get the first sign of mortality, everything changes. You know, nothing tastes good anymore. like that. And it will happen. If you don't practice well, it will happen. If you do practice well, you don't have to worry about it. Okay? You can change it. That's something about the Lam Rim. The Lam Rim is mostly open teachings, okay? There's not much tantra here. To make it complete in the last few pages, they do some tantra. But if you can study well, if you can learn emptiness, and if you can be trained in tantra, then all of the stuff I'm saying is canceled. All right? Okay? That's partly why I didn't teach Lam Rim for a long time. Okay? Because it describes the problem very well, but then you have to know, and it's my job to tell you that what they're describing here is canceled if you understand tantra. Okay? All the problems that I'm describing no longer apply if you can get tantric training. Okay? Secret. And again, it's not some weird thing where you're cutting off chickens' heads and stuff like that. Okay? It's more like what we said. You go to Paradise Cafe, you are doing homework with a lady from Virginia, and suddenly you realize this is Tsongkhapa. You realize she's really Tsongkhapa. You know, it's really, that's tantra. How to make that stuff happen on a regular basis. How to control that process. How to make Tsongkhapa hang around you all day is tantra. That's much different from cutting off chicken heads, okay? Right? Okay. All right. Kam kome thala dungyal mungyawa mekyan kyabadujegi dungyagi rangshin tam meba na rangwan ma tope tar sungwasaw dungyal ne mande. They say in higher realms of existence, like those deities, right? Those worldly galaxy marble players. As you know, there are three forms of suffering, right? There are three famous forms of suffering. That's why the prayer Om Shanti 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 was invented, right? Even in the Hindu tradition, even. It's the same. Om Shanti 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 means, oh, may the first kind of suffering be put to rest, Shanti. May the second kind of suffering be put to rest, Shanti. May the third kind of suffering be put to rest, Shanti. So there are three forms of suffering. First one is called Dumyaki Dumya. It means outright pain. The example in scripture is a headache. Or a backache. Okay, that's the first form of suffering. It's called dumyaki dumya. It's called the suffering of suffering. The second form of suffering is called the suffering of change. Okay. You know what the example is in scripture? Does anybody remember? A good dinner. Going out for a good dinner is the second form of suffering. Okay, why? Because you'll be hungry again tomorrow. It changes. It's called the suffering of change. There's a bitter debate in the monastery whether a good dinner is good. Okay. Then the third kind of suffering is called kabadichiki dunya. That means built, hardwired suffering. Okay, built into you. There's a kind of suffering built into you. Even if they put you in a bank vault when you were born and fed you organic vegetables and vitamins, and you never watched TV your whole life, you would still die in that bank vault. It's part and parcel of your being that your body has been thrown into this world by karma, by your seeds. And those seeds wear out. As you live in this body, you wear out those seeds. The body would get old and kill itself if nothing else killed it. If cancer didn't exist, and high blood pressure and all those things, colon cancer, even if they didn't exist, your body would self-destruct by its own, on its own. Okay, so that's called kamadechikidima. Beings like Brahma or those higher beings, they don't have the first two kinds of suffering. During their whole life, they never have any manifest forms of pain in their whole life. I used to wonder if there was such a thing in this world as someone who went through their whole life without pain. You know, like someone who just never had to go to the dentist. Or I when I was a kid, I used to think that my uncle was very wealthy. And, you know, his family was all very wealthy. And we used to go visit them in Michigan, right? And we would ride on their, what do you call it, lawnmower. It was a big deal for us that we got to ride around in a lawnmower. And then he would take us out to these dinners that cost $1,000 or something. And we would just be in awe of them, you know. And I would look at them and think, did anything bad ever happen to them at all? You know, did they ever get headaches or toothaches? Or were they ever unhappy or sad, you know? And it's like that. Those gods are like that. In the whole length of their whole life, they never had a headache. And nothing ever bad happened at all. You know, like the toilet never got stuck. Or anything, you know, like weird. And then they don't have those first two kinds of suffering, but they have the third. Then their body self-destructs. You know, at a certain point, after thousands and thousands of years, the body self-destructs. And they say it self-destructs. They say that there's a weird thing happens. They get a premonition that they are going to self-destruct. They know, like a month before, that their body's going to self-destruct. And then all this weird thing, stuff happens to them. They start to perspire for the first time. Their clothes are soiled for the first time. They start... and they smell slightly off, and then all the other beings in those realms reject them, and they refuse to talk to them, or they pretend they don't exist. It's like being in a nursing home in America, you know? They pretend that they don't exist. And they say the anguish of loneliness, of having all of the people you've lived around your whole life suddenly pretend you're not there anymore, is much more than the pleasure they have. You see what I mean? And it happens to us, right? They put you away in a nursing home and that's it. And they, like you go to a store, I've watched my older friends in a store and people, even the tellers ignore them. You know, like they go in the store, they have money and they say, I want to buy this, and the teller pretends they're not there. Either they don't see them or they, I don't know, there's some kind of innate fear of a person who's about to die. And they don't want to even talk to them, you know? They don't want to know them. And they don't serve them, you know? And the person's like waving their arms, or you take your car to a mechanic if you're over 70 or 80, and they'll just cheat you wholesale because they know you can't do anything about it, you know? And it's like that. It's like that. And then the anguish of changing is worth, okay, for them. Same with us. Sorry. Whoa. Ningbo gave us a cold, right? It wasn't me. He's been in bed for 2 days. Okay. So when they use up their good karma, they have to fall, okay? And that's that experience that whatever karmic seeds take you up very high, when they wear out, you fall the hardest, okay? We can no longer operate within this kind of system. We have to decide that we can no longer operate in a world that works by these rules. You see what I mean? We have to move on to a higher set of rules. We have to go to a different kind of world. Okay? This world doesn't work, and it never will. Okay? You can become famous, you can get rich, you can do yoga until you can do a handstand in one arm, and then it will fail. It will fall. It will. You will lose it. You will get old and you won't be able to do it. And any position, any fame, any success you get here, it just, it doesn't work. If you are subject to the, to your seeds, to seeds which have been collected unconsciously, without deeper knowledge, you must suffer. You will suffer, okay? So we have to change the rules. We have to try to get to a place where the rules are different, okay? In this system that we are in now, in this world, you can't win. It's built that way, okay? You cannot win. Even if you succeed, you will fall. You will get old. You will lose your money. You will lose your partner. You will lose your house. It's built that way. The system is built that way. To operate on this level, to do the transactions of this world, doesn't work. So then some people, you know, I get really irritated about Lamrim, because some people say, well, okay, then I should go to Nirvana and not be in samsara anymore. I say, where is samsara? They say Arizona, or, you know, they speak as if this is samsara. It's not. Okay? This is not samsara. Samsara is a state of mind, right? Samsara is a way of looking at the world. In the same physical location, if you understood how to plant seeds properly and how to manage those seeds properly, then you would not be subject to all of these things we've described. You would not get old. You would not lose your partner. You would not... You could become successful and stay there, and your body wouldn't age. Okay? That these are. It's not that you go somewhere else. It's not that being here is being in samsara. Okay, I really hope you can get that. Okay, you can leave samsara today in this building, and you'll still be here. Okay, your body, you'll still be here. That's a different thing. We have to learn how the world is being created by our seeds. And then we have to manage those seeds properly. And then all of these things we've described don't apply to you anymore. All right? And that's the whole idea. Okay? You don't have to go through these things. You don't have to go through the ups and downs. You can be permanently successful. You can be healthy, young. You can become a Buddha. Your body can change into light. You can learn those things. The point of describing them is to say that you don't have to go through that. Okay? These things won't apply to you. Okay? They apply to your past. They don't apply to your future. All right? So our goal is to learn a new way, a different set of rules for making things happen. Okay? And then that will apply to your body and everything about your life. You are not stuck here, and it can change, but you need to learn how. Okay? That's all. And again, going back to motivation, that should be your motivation when you do anything. All right, you should go through this train of thought. He didn't get to the book yet, okay? He's just saying this is the train of thought you should have in your mind when you come to the teaching, okay? If we leave things the way they are, you cannot succeed. It's not possible. You will get old and you will die. And things will fail. And your relationships will die and you'll lose everything you ever had. Come to the teaching to learn something other way of living. Come here to this room to learn some other way of of being. And then we can start. We didn't start yet. Okay? All right? Okay. All right. So have a good dinner. Okay. Okay. Jingmei, you want to do it?